You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Frick Collection is celebrating its 75th anniversary this month, and to mark the occasion, it has enhanced its incredible permanent holdings with two special exhibitions: The Spanish Manor, drawings from Rivera to Goya, and The King at War, an examination of Velázquez's portrait of Philip IV. Joining us now are two of the organizers of these exhibits, Jonathan Brown, whom the New York Times called today the leading Velázquez scholar in the United States, and Pablo Perez Dors, former Andrew W. Mellon Curatorial Fellow, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show. Hi.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Jonathan, the Times called you that in a front-page article about another Velázquez portrait of Philip IV, one at the Met. But isn't Pablo responsible for the Velázquez exhibit that is currently at the Frick?
Absolutely. Right.
Are all the drawings in the exhibit you put together from the Frick's permanent collection?
No. Henry Clay Frick really didn't collect works on paper to any great extent. There is one drawing by Goya, which is in the exhibition and certainly played a part in helping us organize the entire show.
This is a Goya drawing that refers to a painting in the collection?
No. Yes, there is one too, come to think of it. There is a drawing in the Met that is a first version for one of Goya's masterpieces in the Frick, the Man at the Forge.
Mm-hmm. Pablo, was the Velázquez part of the original collection?
Yes. Velázquez is part of our permanent collection at the Frick, and it's the only Velázquez in the museum, and I think it really, really stands its ground itself.
Well, it's a great painting. And when you say it stands, he's standing, and that's important too. We have a real sense of this man as an important figure. I can't imagine Philip IV was that tall, but he does come across as incredibly tall in these pictures. It was sent to the Metropolitan Museum's Conservation Department not long ago. Does it look different than it did before you sent it?
Absolutely. It was a really amazing transformation, which Jonathan also saw happening in front of our eyes. And I was extremely lucky to be able to work on this project and look over the conservator's shoulder and see the painting come alive. It was a really amazing process.
Now, what happens over the years? Did people put varnish on it, and did it just pick up dust and stuff to obscure some of the better things?
I think it's mainly to do with the way natural varnishes age. Any of these old master paintings need to be coated in varnish, and then varnishes tend to become a bit cloudy and kind of brownish. So every few decades, this varnish has to be replaced, and that's what was done at the Met Conservation
Center. Now, Velázquez painted Philip IV a number of times over the years. Mm-hmm. What does this painting tell us about Philip?
This is a really unique painting. I think it's very very interesting on its own, just on aesthetical grounds. But what makes it so special is that it was painted for one very specific occasion in the middle of a war, and it was painted for a victory celebration. And it's very unusual that we know so much about why this painting exists, why it looks the way it does, and so on. And what makes it so special is that we've been able to reconstruct so much about its context.
And what about the way he's posed? He has his hat in his hand, but he's leaning on a sword. Would that have been significant to somebody at the time?
He's carrying a naked sword, and this is any gentleman of the time would carry a sword, but in this particular context, it's meant to be read as a military image, as a king who's dressed for war.
Mm-hmm. King, a soldier. Did were there any other portraits of Philip like that, Jonathan?
No, this is unique. It's as Pablo says, we know more about this painting than almost any other in terms of factual information about where it was made, how long it took.
Now, why do we not know more about the other paintings? Velázquez was a very famous painter during his time, and he's painting some of the most important people in his country. The painting that was written about in the Times today, the Metz portrait of Philip, for a long time was thought to have been by his workshop rather than by Velázquez himself. Wouldn't there have been some kind of record of all of the paintings?
Velázquez was was paid a salary, which and then as time went on, he got various perquisites that brought him more money. And the only time that he would have or a work would have been documented was if it was done for somebody other than the king. Mm-hmm. And that's the story with the Metropolitan painting. It was created for a specific person, and the documents concerning the commission were kept in the family and came with the picture.
Would an important painting like a portrait of the king have been done by the workshop rather than by the master himself?
The workshop was a factory for turning out images of the king. It's like, you know, photographs of the president in a post office. You just had to have one.
Well, a lot of the drawings that you have in this exhibit called the Spanish Manor Drawings from Ribera to Goya probably come out of the workshops of those artists.
Oh, indeed they do. The drawings were used for different purposes. One of them was to provide a model for workshop assistants to make replicas. And although the ones that we have in the exhibition are, as far as with a few exceptions, mostly independent works.
The works are so varied, and some look like scrawls on barroom napkins. others are grand illustrations with architectural details. What ties them all together as being in the Spanish manner?
I would say what they have in common, the older drawings and those by Goya, is the rejection of idealization as one of the principal goals of painting. The Spaniards are much more interested in making an immediate impact. They're not bound by the rules and regulations of the classical style as developed in the Renaissance. So they have this distinctive, almost impulsive character that ties them all together, regardless of the subject.
And they're all these are all studies that are meant to be applied to future paintings, or are these sometimes drawings to be disseminated to show what the master had done?
Well, all of the Goya drawings come from albums which he made for his own use, for his own purpose.
Well, he drew more than most artists anyway.
And oh,
he's famous for his etchings, which are another kind of drawing.
The drawings that we have in the exhibition all come from these so-called private albums. They were never, he kept them together. He put them in a certain sequence in some cases. And he uses them to moralize, to observe. He takes us into regions of existence that no other artist before him had done.
I'm talking to two people responsible for two special exhibits at the Frick as part of its 75th anniversary celebration, Jonathan Brown and Pablo Perez Doras. Pablo, did Velázquez use sketches to plan out paintings?
There are a few drawings that have been attributed to Velázquez, but there isn't complete agreement, and in any case, there are very few of them. Velázquez was a different kind of artist, and he tended to think as he painted on the canvas. So
he'd like to work directly onto the canvas.
Yeah.
Well, he seemed to obviously know how to fill the canvas, because this portrait of Philip IV, it starts at the top and ends at the bottom, and he definitely filled that canvas.
But you can see adjustments he painted over, so the outlines are somewhat blurred as the second idea has been superimposed over the first.
So he was drawing with paint.
Exactly.
Instead of working the painting out and then just working it out on paper and then putting it on. Was there any one Spanish style? I mean, I was struck by the wide range of mediums used in the drawings. You have pen and ink or brush and ink, sometimes with a wash. You have gouache. You have chalk, charcoal, crayon. Did each master have a favorite drawing medium?
No, they usually mastered them all and had used them for different purposes. The finished drawings sometimes were done to be sold. The finished drawings were sometimes just done for the artist to practice, as a musician would do her scales just to keep in shape.
Actually, we see that with art today. A lot of galleries sell the preparatory drawings and other things for large works that most people can't put into their homes, but they're happy to have the other works that the artist did in thinking through the problem.
Christo is famous for this. It seems that he makes drawings specifically in connection with big projects that he expects to sell after the projects have been dismantled.
Now, we mentioned earlier the drawing Three Men Digging, which is a drawing for the, is it the Forge?
The Forge, yes.
The Forge, which is a grand painting upstairs in the Collections East Gallery. So how much did Goya rely on his drawings as a way of preparing the canvas?
Well, not so much for his paintings, but for the prints. Los Caprichos, Disasters of War, Disparates, and the bullfighting series, these were all worked out in chalk before he made the etchings.
The museum is celebrating its 75th year, as I said. What can the both of you tell us about its founding, about how important, let's say, Henry Frick was in deciding what works to go in? Because anybody can go out there and buy a lot of old masters, but this is a particularly wonderful selection. Obviously, a great eye was at work there.
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about it. Frick loved great paintings. He knew quality when he saw it, and he would spend any amount of money to get what he wanted. And so there's a kind of consistency in the collection, even though the subjects may vary. You do get a sense of a personal taste at work.
Were these all intended just for his own personal pleasure initially?
Initially, but he always planned to give them away. That is to say, to give them to the public right from the start, it seems. That was his intention.
Now, I've read that the Velazquez cost him $145,000. That was a lot of money in – how many years ago did he buy it?
This was in 1911, so it was –
that would be many, many millions of dollars today.
It's very
so people knew this was a great painting even then.
Absolutely, and it made the headlines, actually. People were astonished that this was such an expensive painting that Frick had pursued. And also, from a less sensationalist point of view, it's art historically very important because there's a copy of this painting which – up to then, it was thought to be the original, and then when Frick's painting appeared in the market, it was evident that was the master's original. So,
well, a lot of Velazquez's tend to sell for record prices. The Met bought a portrait some years back, and it was caused a sensation. People wondered whether that much money should be spent on a painting. Is Velazquez a special case? When we start talking about the great artists of all time, his name is the first one that comes to most people's minds.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, he's the greatest painter who ever lived, but I may be prejudiced. Having spent most of my adult life studying his work, I think that...
Influenced by Caravaggio?
To some extent, at the beginning.
Yeah.
But later he develops... And you see this very clearly in the Frick, a very free manner of painting where one blob of paint is sufficient to suggest in something quite specific and material.
So when he's painting some lace, he doesn't do what a Holbein would have done and shown us every little thread. He just does a bunch of fancy brushwork, and then when we look at it, it looks just like lace.
Yeah, it is amazing. He seems to have understood sooner than anybody that looking at pictures is not only a visual enterprise, it's an intellectual enterprise. And so you can expect the viewer to, particularly if you're working for the king, to respond and to fill in the gaps that you've left on the surface.
Was that appreciated at the time?
Very much.
People understood that what he was doing was that he was a master of brushwork.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
This is a one painting exhibit. Mm-hmm. How often does that happen?
It's a slightly unusual type of exhibition that many visitors are not used to. But actually, the Frick does this Rina so often. The idea is, instead of giving an idea to the visitors by putting paintings in the context of other paintings, we've tried to do a very close look at one painting and give the visitor as many clues as possible to enhance the experience and allow the visitors to enjoy and appreciate the painting.
It's in a room with four whistlers.
Mm-hmm.
Was that intentional?
That's not entirely unintentional. That's it so happens that when the Frick Museum opened to the public, that's the way that room looked. It's obviously temporary structure wasn't there, but the Velázquez was on the back on wall of that room, and he was surrounded by the four whistlers. And of course, Whistler was an artist who greatly appreciated Velázquez, so it does make
well, there's also Renoir, who does not look to me very much like Velázquez. But was Velázquez a major influence in the way that Goya was on an artist like Manet?
Oh, definitely. It's well established that when Manet made his first trip to the Prado, he was ecstatic about Velázquez. He called him the painter of painters. And it's known now that he and many of his French contemporaries drew profound inspiration from works by Velázquez that they saw in the Prado.
How long are these exhibits running?
The Velázquez show.
Well, the Velázquez will be there forever, right? It's part of the collection.
Well, the painting will be there forever. And this particular show will be up until the 24th of January.
And this ours show goes till the 9th of January. I would say the one space in the Frick that has the power to transform paintings, even the greatest, is the Oval Gallery, mm-hmm. where this is taking place. And even though the picture has been moved maybe 10 feet from its usual spot, being in that gallery just changes it.
Jonathan, just one more thing. The Velázquez at the Met that was thought to be by his workshop, and just recently, and you felt it was as well, now everybody seems to agree that it's by the master himself. What determines that?
Well, in this particular case, technical examination certainly helped a great deal by revealing how much had been repainted. As far as
the time showed a close-up of the hand.
Right. And I would say maybe 50 or 60% of the original remains. But the part that remains, now that we can see it, is of just enormous quality.
And why would only 50 or 60% remain? Had the painting been damaged over the years?
It appears to have been damaged and very, very clumsily restored.
Which is a problem, I'm sure, for all art historians in evaluating paintings. Somebody comes along and decides, oh, I can make this better. These colors are fading.
Yeah, that's why I've said, you know, attribution is a moving target. And you can't, you know, you don't want to pin yourself down.
Well, the Frick has a painting called The Polish Rider by, used to be attributed to Rembrandt. Now the Rembrandt experts said it's not by Rembrandt. And my response when they decided it wasn't by Rembrandt was, whoever did it was a very great painter.
And now I think it's agreed that his name was Rembrandt.
Oh, I'm so pleased. I'm so relieved. Well, thank you both so much for being with us, Jonathan Brown and also Pablo Perez-Dores. We've been talking about two exhibits at the Frick running into January, the Spanish Manor, drawings from Roberto Goya, and The King at War, an examination of Velázquez's portrait of Philip IV. It's been a pleasure.
Equally.
Thank you very much.